Here's a puzzle that keeps executives awake at night. Why do well-managed, innovative companies, praised by analysts, beloved by customers, studied in business schools, suddenly lose their dominance to scrappy upstarts? We're not talking about complacent dinosaurs. We're talking about Sears, once representing 2% of all U.S. retail sales, missing the discount retail revolution. IBM, missing mini computers. Digital Equipment Corporation, missing personal computers. The pattern is haunting because these companies received their highest accolades precisely when they were ignoring the threats that would destroy them. The answer lies in a counterintuitive insight. The very management practices that create success, listening to customers, pursuing higher margins, investing in better products, become the mechanisms of failure when facing certain types of innovation. Sustaining technologies improve products along dimensions mainstream customers already value: faster processors, greater storage, better fuel efficiency. Established companies excel here because their organizational machinery delivers what customers want. Disruptive technologies play by different rules. They initially underperform in mainstream markets, but offer something else entirely: simplicity, convenience, affordability, or portability. When 5.25-inch disk drives appeared, they offered only 10 megabytes capacity versus 60 megabytes for 8-inch drives. By every metric that mattered to existing customers, they were inferior, but they were smaller and cheaper, making them perfect for the emerging desktop computer market that established manufacturers dismissed as toys. Here's the trap. When Seagate's engineers developed 3.5-inch drive prototypes, marketing showed them to existing customers who wanted more capacity, not smaller size. Seagate shelved the project. Meanwhile, these drives conquered the laptop market, improved rapidly, and eventually became good enough for desktops. By the time Seagate realized its mistake, new entrants owned the market. Good management practices, listening to customers, making data-driven decisions led directly to failure. Why does this pattern repeat so predictably? The answer lies in value networks, the context within which companies operate that fundamentally shapes what they can see, do, and prioritize. Think of a 1980s corporate computer system, mainframes connected to disk drives containing motors and semiconductors. This nested architecture creates a corresponding network of producers, suppliers, and markets, each with distinct priorities. In corporate computing, performance means storage capacity and processing speed. Customers paid $1.65 for each additional megabyte in 1988. But in portable computing, performance means ruggedness, power efficiency, and compact size. These customers valued an extra megabyte at only $1.17, but paid premiums for attributes mainframe customers ignored. These aren't just different preferences, they're different realities. Value networks also embed cost structures that become nearly impossible to change. Mainframe businesses require substantial R&D, sophisticated manufacturing, and specialized sales forces, necessitating 50 to 60% gross margins. Portable computer networks operate with standardized manufacturing and retail distribution, profitable at 15 to 20% margins. When your infrastructure requires 50% margins to survive, pursuing a 20% margin business isn't just unattractive, it's organizational suicide. Companies move up market with remarkable ease, but struggle desperately to move down. When 3.5-inch drives invaded from below, Seagate retreated up market to file servers, maintaining margins but surrendering the future. Three forces create this asymmetry. Higher margins attract resources, customers migrate upward, and cost structures resist downward movement. Technologies improve faster than markets can absorb them, creating inevitable disruption. Desktop PCs illustrate this perfectly. Initially, capacity mattered most. Then size became critical. Manufacturers paid $4.72 per cubic inch reduction in 1986. By 1989, this premium collapsed to 0.06. Next came reliability, commanding premiums until mean time between failure approached 1 million hours. Once oversupplied, brutal price competition ensued with margins tumbling below 12%. This buying hierarchy, functionality, then reliability, then convenience, then price, repeats predictably across industries. Eli Lilly's insulin demonstrates the trap. After investing nearly $1 billion in genetically engineered human insulin with 100% purity, customers resisted paying a 25% premium. They were already satisfied with existing pork insulin. Lilly had overshot market needs. Meanwhile, Novo developed insulin pens, reducing injection time from 1 to 2 minutes to 10 seconds, easily commanding a 30% premium. When performance is oversupplied, competition shifts to new dimensions, and incumbents miss it because they're fixated on old metrics. Successful companies harness 5 key principles to navigate disruption. First, recognize that companies depend on customers and investors for resources. High-performing companies excel at killing ideas customers don't want, which is exactly the problem with disruptive technologies. The solution? Create autonomous organizations where different customers and economics apply. Second, small markets don't solve large companies' growth needs. A $40 million company needs $8 million for 20% growth. A $4 billion company needs $800 million, larger than most emerging markets. Assign disruptive technologies to units whose size matches the opportunity. Third, markets that don't exist can't be analyzed. For disruption, action must precede planning. Focus on learning rather than predicting. Fourth, organizational capabilities define disabilities. Processes and values enabling success in one context become barriers in another. Capabilities reside in organizational systems, far less flexible than individuals. Fifth, technology supply rarely equals market demand. Products underperforming today may become directly competitive tomorrow. Only by measuring how customers actually use products can you anticipate when competition will shift from functionality to reliability to convenience to price. Understanding why companies fail is valuable, but knowing how to succeed is essential. Most innovations aren't inherently sustaining or disruptive. They're shaped by strategic choices, giving managers control but requiring rigorous analysis. Apply 3 litmus tests. For new market disruption, is there a large population lacking money, equipment, or skill to do this themselves? Early personal computers passed this test. Non-programmers suddenly accessed computing power. For low-end disruption, would customers accept less performance at lower prices? Can you profit at those prices? Southwest Airlines exemplified this, offering fewer amenities but reliable, affordable travel. Finally, is this disruptive to all significant incumbents? If it appears sustaining to any major player, they'll likely win. Successful innovators share distinctive characteristics. They start before they need to, launching new businesses while core operations remain healthy, as IBM did with PCs in the 1980s. They keep units small through decentralization, creating more managers seeking disruptive opportunities. They demand early success, forcing rapid learning rather than endless subsidization. Organizations cannot disrupt themselves within existing structures. Charles Schwab succeeded with online trading by creating a separate unit with 29.95 trades rather than transforming its mainstream business. Google's Alphabet represents modern application of this principle, allowing initiatives to operate independently. Christensen's framework reveals that managing innovation isn't about finding smarter people or working harder. It's recognizing that capabilities valuable in one context become disabilities in another. Core competencies transform into vulnerabilities. The insights are deceptively simple yet powerful. Markets can't absorb technological progress at the pace it's offered. Resource allocation inherently favors sustaining over disruptive innovation. Forcing disruptive technologies into mainstream markets almost always fails. And critical information for investing in disruption must be created through market experimentation, not traditional analysis. The most powerful protection for disruptive entrants is that established firms find pursuing what doesn't fit their business model genuinely difficult. Netflix succeeded because Blockbuster's business model couldn't adapt without cannibalizing itself. Yet established companies can overcome these barriers by creating contexts where capabilities and values align to support both sustaining and disruptive innovation. As artificial intelligence, quantum computing, and other potentially disruptive technologies emerge, Christensen's framework remains urgently relevant. The question isn't whether disruption will occur, it's whether you'll be the disruptor or the disrupted. The only sustainable advantage is recognizing when the rules are changing and having the courage to change with them.